Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show. I'm Bruce Cameron. Justin Nimmergood can't be with us this week. He's busy on assignment. And so we wish him well. He'll be back with us next week, and we'll get to hear from him and everything that that he's doing. So anyway, we have a special guest today, and I think she just made it on the show. Christine, are you there with us? Christine. Okay, maybe not. All right, maybe our other guest, Mr. Santana, is Jose there?
Yes, Bruce, I'm here.
Okay.
Good afternoon. Okay,
well, hello, you've reached Christine with the perfect catch. Thank you so very much.
And Ronan, don't worry about calling Christine. Don't worry about it. We have Jose with us today, and we'll catch her again. Don't worry about calling her. So, well, good afternoon, Mr. Santana. Got a special guest today.
Good afternoon.
Again, making another special appearance here on the LA Talk Radio Concierge Coach. So, Mr. Jose Santana. Jose, how you doing?
Good, Bruce. How are you? Glad to be here with you.
Great, man. Great. So, boy, it's been an interesting journey. I know that you and I are very active in prison reform and not prison reform per se, but providing services to either attorneys, federal defendants, family members of federal prisoners, as it relates to some of the new things that are coming online with the First Step Act that was signed into law in January 2018. And here we are almost 8 months after that. And man, it's been a busy 8 months since Trump signed that into law, hasn't it?
Yes, sir. It's been going 8 months now.
8 months. And this has been really interesting. I think one of the first topics I want to cover, Jose, and of course, we have a First Step Act Facebook page as well. But a lot of questions out there about the first thing that was supposed to happen with the First Step Act was, well, one of the first things that was supposed to happen was inmates were going to go from 47 days a year to a full 54 days a year in good conduct time. And the BOP was going to allegedly, rather the Bureau of Prisons, that's BOP, is Federal Bureau of Prisons, was going to have the new good conduct time dates provided to the inmates by July, what was the date? July 20-something?
July 19th.
Or July 19th.
July 19th.
But evidently, right, all the inmates didn't get their dates changed. Can you talk a little bit about what some of the barriers or the challenges are to the Bureau of Prisons to getting those dates changed and why they might have gone past the deadline?
Sure, Bruce. You know, I think we mentioned previously that the Bureau, as soon as the law was enacted and signed by the president, they gave them 7 months. It was the July 19th date, a couple of Fridays ago, that the Bureau had to implement that. And they have been working on it. I mean, the Bureau has been pretty proactive and diligent. But as everybody knows, things move slowly in government. So the Bureau started working to getting their information technology programs updated. They haven't been updated yet, so they had to go manually. And so that has been the delay. The Bureau, actually the computation folks, where I used to be the chief, are working manually to get those updated. So it's a slow process. They're working very active on it. There are 17 teams that handled the 95 court of jurisdictions that imposed sentence. So 180,000 inmates, just they're moving at the pace they can, and they're working hard to update everybody. So it's trickling in slowly, but surely everybody will get the updates. You know, one of the frequent questions we get, Bruce, is that retroactive. Yes, it's retroactive to everybody in federal prison, except those inmates that have life sentences. Unfortunately, those will not get good conduct time updated, adjusted. But even the non-U.S. citizens, foreign citizens that are incarcerated in the private prisons that are contracted by the Bureau of Prisons, those will be updated also. So they're working on it. As I urge everybody to check the BOP locator or give us a call and see how we could help y'all to see if the adjustments are going or have been updated.
The inmate locator is inside the BOP.gov site. So is there any method to the madness though, man? I mean, it seems like on the thread, like there'd be some of the people with longer sentences got their dates calculated. Some of the people with shorter sentences got their dates calculated. So is there any method to the madness on who gets their date done, or is it purely by, you know, team, their DSCC team that they're assigned to? Is there any method to the madness on how they've gone about this thus far?
The information that I've received in my conversations with the folks there in the Bureau is that the inmates that are going to be released immediately, for example, let me give you an example, Bruce. In 2019, Friday, July 2019, there was 2,200 inmates that were released. And majority of those inmates were either in home confinement, electronic monitoring, or residential release centers, RRCs, or halfway houses, or imminent release from prison. There was 900 of those additionally were non-U.S. citizens. So there was a total of 3,100 inmates that were released.
Approximately
900.
So all those people that were there, they're still doing their time in a private joint waiting deportation or hearing, right?
They're either already in ICE custody or they are at those private contract facilities that I mentioned.
So the
deal to the madness, as you say, Bruce, is that they're trying to work with those that have imminent releases, or that are either in those places in RRCs or home confinement electronic monitoring, and those that, non-U.S. citizens that are out of the custody of the Bureau of Prisons. So they're trying to work with everybody. A lot of those folks also went on to, from the prisons to the RRCs on their adjustments. So their work, it's kind of convoluted, when you look at it, because the Bureau has a very technical mission of looking at those cases, plus they got to factor in those inmates that whose good conduct time was forfeited for whatever reason, for discipline, sanctions, and things like that. So it's a little technical in nature, adjusting those.
Okay. So what I hear you saying is that, okay, so part of the method to the madness was getting the people who were very near release or at release first.
Yes.
And again, a lot of those people could release from either, like I said, halfway house, home confinement, they're a detainee or an alien or a non-U.S. citizen, and they would either go to an ICE place or they would stay in their private prison run place pending a hearing or deportation or whatever. Do you have any idea of how many people came right out of a joint, or ballpark, how many people just came out of a joint with no RRC or anything like that?
I haven't got that figure yet, Bruce. I'm looking at it. You know, they're looking at how many were there, and I haven't gotten those figures yet. But in the future, I will get them to you, Bruce. No doubt.
Okay.
But the 2,200, that number, 2,200, give or take, there were some that were at the Bureau of Prisons custody, but the majority came out of the home confinement, electronic monitoring, and RRC placement. So that's why, you know, even technically, you could say those 2,200 came out of Bureau of custody because they're still serving a Bureau of Prison sentence. They're not released. They're released physically from prison, but they're still under Bureau of Prisons oversight, if you will.
Okay. All right. All righty then. So that sounds like a good. I'm setting up this thing that people can actually call us and maybe ask some questions. So, Ronan, if you're listening, we may get a couple of callers coming in from anywhere in the United States to ask myself and Jose questions about the Bureau of Prisons or the First Step Act or what have you. So, okay, well, that's,
you know, let me explain to you. Let me explain to you one thing, Bruce, relative to the good conduct time, you know, that people don't understand the change to the First Step Act, the calculation of good conduct time, you know, and that's a question we get all the time. You know, prior to the First Step Act, the inmates that qualified earn up to 54 days of good conduct time for each year served. And in accordance with Title 18 of United States Code Section 3624B, the BOP, the way it was calculated, prorated the amount of good conduct time earned for the final year of service of sentence. Under the amendments made by the First Step Act, the inmates that qualify will be eligible to earn up to the 54 days of good conduct time for each year of sentence imposed. Before, it was a year and a day. Now it's just total for 1 year. And then it was prorated. So the average the inmate got was 47 days. It wasn't the total 54 days. Now it's total 54 per year.
Right. So, yeah. So can you, now a lot of people really freak out, Jose, when they say, what do you mean they're hand calculating? So can you give me an example of a case, you know, with the release date, where the BOP staff member is going to literally have to get out a calculator and prorate, right, the 54 divided by, you know what I mean? Do you have any examples like that, how that might work by hand?
Well, I'll give you an example of how it's done. Now, the Bureau has a program that they use in their secure network for prisoner sentence computations. The inmate gets, let's say, 188-month sentence. That 188-month sentence is input into the formula right now, which is for a year and a day. Remember, it's for a year and a day. It's not a straight 54 days per year. It's different now. So they have to go manually and update the computation instead of using that program. Follow me?
Okay.
Instead of using the program they have now, the information technology they have now, they cannot use it because it will not give them the straight 54 days. So they have to input manually into a manual computation the total amount of sentence and 54 days discounted per year. It's different. It's totally different. Two different concepts. So that's why it's taken so long, because they have to input it manually, the information. They were doing it prior to the First Step Act was they were inputting the sentence, and the computer calculated the sentence because it's already in there. Now it's not. So they have to change that technology. And that technology is very old. It's not as easy as just updating the algorithms of math in the computer. It's very old. It's very technical. Plus, they have to calculate the sentencing structures under what sentencing method they were, a projected release method they were sentenced under. It's old law, new law. Old law doesn't even get First Step Act benefits. So, because it was prior to November 1st, 1987. So anybody under October 31st, 1987 is considered old law before that. So
right.
So it gets technical. It gets very technical.
It is technical. So all the old law cases don't count. Of course, you and I have an old law case right now where the family member was hoping that the First Step Act calculation would count for their loved one. But unfortunately, old law cases are precluded from the First Step Act. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yes,
absolutely,
sir.
Absolutely. And real quick, just really quick, going back to this, I don't want to say hand calculating, but you know what I'm saying, like going through this other program to calculate the release date. So let's say, you know, you have somebody on the team that does these dates. Does that person then enter it into the system, or does it have to be checked by like a GS 1314? You know what I'm saying? Is there some sort of a check to that calculation?
Well, the DSEC has a different structure than previously the Inmate System Management Department had. You know, after consolidation in 2004 and the reinvention of government, the functions of the records office, which we call Inmate System Management, ISM, the Bureau of Prisons, got it in consolidated into the DSEC. So now the structure is a legal technician, which is really a classification computation technician, kind of does the computation. The classification computation specialist reviews it, audits it, and then it's finalized there. If it's a complicated one, then it goes to the supervisor, which is an operations manager, GS-13, that will review it. But before the inmate is released, a year prior to the inmate's release, that computation is done a final pre-release audit to ensure that if the inmate got everything that he or she is supposed to get and applied correctly and accurately. Sometimes if the sentence is updated while the inmate is serving their sentence, they send to the DSEC orders. Sometimes that's why you and I, Bruce, we encourage attorneys not to seal documents, because if an order from a judge is sealed, we don't know about it, and that's how inmates get released late. So we've had an issue with that in the past, and we encourage everybody to send their documents to the DSEC. So inmate sentences could get updated accurately and quickly. But to answer your question, it's only a GS-9 that does the classification, the computation, then the GS-11 reviews it, and that's it. It's a different structure nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. I knew it was, you know, variations on a theme, but just making sure, like, there was some supervision, like you said, or they go back and they do an audit. Obviously, these first ones, these first ones with the immediate releases and the near releases, man, had to be kind of on point, you know what I mean, enough to get that initial flush out of the system. And it's amazing. It's, having the First Step Act, you know, Facebook, its own little page and everything, and really seeing the family members, man, you would think that hardly anybody got their date changed, you know, because I think it was about, I don't know, close to 400, maybe 450 members now on that now. And now, you know, I sent up a post like, hey, you know, how many of y'all's loved one got their date changed? Mm-hmm. And like only one or two, but it seems like the vast majority are still waiting. And that makes sense, right? Because if they're longer term releases, right, then it's just going to take a while to get to them. So what?
Right, right. And there's many factors, Bruce, that impact that, because right now, as you and I know, there are inmates that have a conditional residential drug abuse.
I was going to say that. RDAP people that are on DAP weight or are actually RDAP. Right. Yeah. And they have a 3621E conditional. Right. Now that was going to move.
Yeah. So the RDAP date, that RDAP date is kind of going to be shifted again. And then it has to be recalculated. We have a case right now that the inmate had a May release date. Now with the FSA, it went up to an August release date. So it's really interesting, because
they
the institution has to submit.
They lost time. Almost earned a year.
Well, they lost time because it was a 36-21 in condition.
Oh, remember that.
Now the institution has to resubmit the form. Has to resubmit the form to adjust the date by the DSCC. So it's really very technical.
Okay, so
in the computation.
So let's walk through this one. I know it's going to sound technical and horribly boring unless your loved one is in RDAP. So here we go. We got a guy. He's an RDAP participant, right? He's an RDAP participant. He has in his hands a 36-21E conditional release date, right? And let's say he's a couple of months into the program, right? So he's got a good 6-7 more months of the program. He's got his 180-day halfway house to do. We all know this, right? So no big deal there. But so are you saying then when First Step Act passed, they had to go ahead and back him out all the way, right, and go back to his original GCT and then apply the good conduct days and then apply 36-21A after that? You see what I'm saying? Is that how they do it, or they do it a different way? Did I make sense there, by the way?
Yes. You explained it better than me, Bruce.
Good Lord, I can't believe
that's exactly the way.
Had a programs guy explain something like that. Unbelievable. Okay, yeah. So so that's what I was trying to do. You know, talk to some loved ones again. They're like, man, why do you know this and that? You know, the date. I said, no. They had to back all that out, go back to the original date, apply the new good conduct time, and then apply the 36-21E date. And people are going to get really pissed off, some of them, because they're thinking, hey, you know, it's not the year off program, it's the drug program, right? So the policy language says inmates may receive up to, I think it's ordinarily, inmates receive up to 1 year off their sentence. And man, you know, some of these guys, because of the GCT, they got shorted on their, let's see, will they get shorter? Some of them will get shorted on their time cut because if they played it to the wire to get them into RDAP, they get shorted, all right. Some might. Might just get a couple months, you know, 36-21 after they're done with their 180-day RRC placement. And make no mistake about it, they're going to do at least 4 months of the RRC placement before they're eligible to receive a time cut under 36-21A. So you know, a lot of times, you know, you got to get your programming time in first. You got to honor the program. You got to complete the community-based portion of the program, which is weekly counseling, for at least 120 days before the early release statute can kick in. So that was another issue back in the day for me. You know, certifying those releases in the regional office. You know, these guys would come through, and so I'm glad I'm not there now. To be honest with you, right? I'd be carrying a calculator.
No, it's very busy. Very busy times in the DSCC, I'm telling you, and the Bureau of Prisons for that matter. Absolutely.
Woo, man, that's just, you know, this is just the surface, you know, the surface scratching the surface, man. So so what's another thing? Another topic I'd cover, unless you got another topic, is not necessarily crimes of violence, but crimes of violence and kind of violent conduct. Okay.
No, I think that one thing that we need to mention, the fact that we already mentioned it once, but I want to emphasize that only inmates convicted of a federal offense committed after November 1st, 1987, and also inmates convicted of a District of Columbia, D.C. code, felony offenses committed on or after August 5th, 2000. Those are the inmates that are eligible to earn up to 54 days of good conduct time. We get a lot of questions. And so only inmates, it is retroactive after before December 21st, 2018, and only inmates under the new law, November 1st, 1987, and DC code offenders committed on or after August 5th, 2000. So that's one point that I wanted to make, because we get a lot of questions about that.
Yeah. And thank you for remembering the DC code offenders. Yes, sir. We forget that those are part of the federal family now. Right.
Yeah. So, absolutely.
So, yeah. So,
another question, Bruce, going back into the RDAP programming, you know, there's a lot of questions also about the residential drug abuse program. If the federal, if the First Step Act changed the RDAP program or the Second Chance, you know, the First Step Act did not change anything. The Bureau of Prisons Residential Drug Abuse Program, the 500-hour intensive residential drug abuse program, was not changed in any way by the First Step Act. The one thing that I want to mention is that you cannot double dip into benefits of First Step Act and Second Chance Act, or First Step Act and RDAP. So I want to make that clear, because we get a lot of questions. Oh, he completed RDAP, so what's for him for the First Step Act?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And not only, you can't double dip. You can't double dip release methods or even programs for that matter. I know there's still a lot of discussion about, like, well, if I'm going to RDAP and I got a lot of time on my sentence, can I still, you know, get some benefits under First Step Act? And that, you know, I don't know. You know, will they get more home confinement? Will they get into home confinement earlier? Or will they just give these guys time off of their supervisor's release off the back end? So there's still some unknowns there to some extent. But there's at least one federal prison consultant who, he's an ex-convict and he's dead wrong. And he's advertising that he double dipped, you know, that he got a year off of sentence and he got some other time credits and whatever else. And he's just doing a great disservice to people. And I just hate to see these people get duped by some of the ex-convicts in the space, but they seem to be dropping like flies, either through getting back in criminal conduct or what have you, or some of these guys getting into other interests and figuring out that being a federal prison consultant is not an easy job. You got to know what you're doing, and not only that, you have to know. You have to know exactly where to go to in policy. You have to know where to go to when you ask questions with staff members and officials. And these guys are just, you know, they're just scrambling. They can't even approach the agency because they don't know who to approach, nor would the agency even talk to them or give them the time of day. So,
right. And I'm glad you mentioned that, Bruce, because, you know, there is a difference between attorneys and some of the litigating attorneys that are experts out there in corrections, and some of those criminal defense attorneys that don't know how to navigate within the structures of the Bureau of Prisons, the classification systems, and that they don't comprehend. They have a little bit of a knowledge of it, but really, that's where a good federal prison consultant, or respectable federal prison consultant that is cognizant of the latest changes, will come in handy to help the loved ones and the family and the inmate get a clear sense of how these new changes apply. Because one thing is, Bruce, even though the BOP residential drug abuse program was not changed by the First Step Act, one of the things that I see that benefits an inmate from both the early release due to the RDAP and participation under the 3620 and the changes to good conduct time is that the inmate could get the good conduct time change, the adjusted good conduct, the application of the good conduct time under the FSA, the straight 54, plus the RDAP, like we mentioned, the 3621E conditional date and the date by completing the program. That could happen. That's going to happen. But the BOP, like we very well said, is reviewing inmates participating in the RDAP and that has a 3621E conditional release date to determine the amount of sentence reduction that would be appropriate under the First Step Act. So that's pending on some cases. A lot of those inmates were already in the halfway house, RRC, or have participated in the program, were in home confinement, or electronic monitoring. So those that have the 3621 in conditional, they're still pending, and this coming, the Bureau is working hard to get it done. And I admire the Bureau, because it's a daunting task, Bruce. I've been there and done that.
Yes, you have. You're right there on the front lines with these types of issues. I was on the front lines of other issues and have all the empathy for you guys on that side of the house, for sure. And yeah, you're right. You know, it's so I just beg people, you know, like, why hasn't his date changed? Why hasn't my son's date changed? And man, it just go on and on. I was like, hey, they're gonna get to it. Try to be patient, you know. You know, a lot of these folks are, you know, getting kind of antsy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A dude and can you imagine your Sally, you know, he gets his cut, but you don't get your cut. And, you know what I'm saying? And then,
right.
I guess that could bring up some tension on the compound. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It does. It brings tension to the compound. Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. Particularly from those inmates that can't have, you know, that can't have the benefit of the program or that had those longer sentences. You know, really want to get home quick.
Right. Exactly. They have longer sentence. And just, you know, and look, I mean, I get it. If I had a 2055, 2060 release date, hey, you know what I'm saying? I know I'm getting, 54 times whatever. If that's, you know, 10 years, it's 540 days, you know, right? I mean, 10 years, that's 540 days. I mean, I'd want to see a new sentence computation sheet. You know what I mean? It makes me do my time a little easier. Even knowing that. So I know it's easy for us as civilians to go like, oh, well, screw you. You got 10, 15 years, you know, just, you know, you got nothing coming now. Just wait till you get what you got coming. But no, man, it does make a difference to know that, you know, what your out date is. You know what I mean? I think that'd be comforting to me to know what my GCT date was. And then I could start shooting for credits and more home confinement and, you know what I'm saying? Maybe transferring down to a camp, get some extra work credits, and really make the most of the First Step Act here the next couple of years.
Right, right, right.
So,
yes, sir.
Want to know what you had coming, man. You know?
Yes, sir. So, they always ask the question, you know, one of the frequent questions that I see that it was discussed in the Bureau of Prison, BOP.gov, and one of the questions that we got, I know a couple of our customers, Bruce, have asked. So my loved one, he's going to get the maximum because he's taking all kinds of programs. He's going to get all the earned time credits. But it doesn't work like that. It really doesn't work that way. There are statutory limitations on how much home confinement or electronic monitoring an inmate could get.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that because I think some people see this as an open pit, like you can earn so many credits till you got half your time versus half the credit. So you have any, how can you explain what the limitations are in terms of how much time, or I know this is uncharted territory, so we can't hold you to it, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you got to keep in mind, and let's go into how this the earned time credit works. First of all, the Bureau is establishing got already the risk and needs assessment system. The risk and needs assessment system will be used to determine the risk and needs of inmates that are in BOP custody actually right now. So certainly that system is the one that's going to be used to determine the recidivism risk of an inmate. And then what's going to happen is that's going to assign a recidivism risk score to that inmate according to what is known now as the security classification system they're going to pair it with the security classification system of the Bureau, which is minimum, low, medium, or high risk. So the classification system of the Bureau is minimum, low, medium, or high. Minimum are camps, low or low security secure facilities, medium have a little bit more security structure, and accountability for inmates inside the prison walls, medium security, and then high security is the highest security level. So the inmates are going to now receive a risk score of minimum, low, medium, or high risk. based on the risk assessment needs. That system is also going to be used to assess and evaluate each inmate and determine to whatever the BOP thinks is practicable, the inmate's risk of violent or serious misconduct. So based on that score, the inmate's going to get a number based on his risk. It's going based on the risk. And then so the BOP staff, and this is yet to be determined, it's going to be in the next 2 years, it's going to be pilot programs in different male and female facilities, different levels, security levels. And then the BOP staff will use that system to determine the type and amount of evidence-based recidivism reduction programming that is appropriate for each inmate and assign recommended programming based on the inmate-specific criminogenic needs. So that's how it's going to work. That's how it's going to work. So, but there are statutory limits on how much home confinement the inmate can get based on the time that is going to be applied under earned qualifying time credits based on those programs. Okay.
Okay.
So that inmate can only be placed into home confinement for the shorter of 10% of the term of imprisonment or 6 months. Inmates participating in the Second Chance Act home confinement pilot program may only be placed on home confinement if they have served 2/3 of their sentence. So, on the risk assessment, risk and needs assessment system, the inmate is going to earn 10 days for every 30, plus depending on two consecutive successful low risk reviews, he could get an additional 5 days.
Okay.
So the maximum an inmate could get is 15 days of earned time credits. That's going to be applied to either the home confinement or the electronic monitoring or early supervision. So, and that's yet to be determined. This is new on uncharted waters. The Bureau that hasn't determined which are the programs that are going to be specifically applied to this. What are the evidence-based recidivism reduction programs? They haven't determined that yet.
So could it be that, like, an inmate might at a United States penitentiary, right, might take the risk assessment
mm-hmm.
once, and then maybe 5-10 years later take it again, and then maybe have something coming, or is it?
No, they'll be evaluated at least every year. Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah. Inmates in a penitentiary will be evaluated to determine if they can go to a lower security level. That's what I'm saying. In conjunction with their custody classification review and their program review, the unit team review.
Right. So, yeah, because sometimes, you get some guys in penitentiaries for one reason, not necessarily for another, but that's going to be, like I said, it's going to be very interesting to see
it is.
how that all shakes out,
It is going to be.
Now, what is the 2022, the BOP is what, until 2022 to start releasing people under this, or just having the programs established? I remember seeing that date. Do you remember seeing that date floating around?
Yes, that date is the time where it is required for the Bureau by the Act to report to Congress their reporting on how this program and how the First Step Act has been applied, what programs have they used. So it's work in progress for the next 2 years. That's what I'm saying. It's uncharted territory. 2 years, they have 2 years now. And then they report to Congress what they have done, which institutions have applied the recidivism reducing programs, and which are the specific evidence-based programs that they're applying in each institution, how many inmates have participated, how many inmates have been released, how many inmates have been released to halfway houses, home confinement, electronic monitoring, and all that. So.
Now, is there going to be like a second step act after the first step act, or have you heard anything about that? I know that's been a rumor in the wind about more stuff coming down the pike.
I think down the road, they're going to see how this works and how it's applied and how they can improve it. And enact some more laws to this to benefit future generations of inmates. So I think the first step back is a move in the right direction. There's still a lot of things that need to be done. For example, when I was in the chief of the Designation and Sentence Computation Center, we proposed to have more drug courts, you know, for first-time offenders. We are for also for white-collar offenders or for inmates that recidivated, that violated their supervised release terms because of drug use, alcohol use, you know, crimes that are not violent in nature or predatory in nature or, you know, pose a risk to the public safety. Just inmates are just need drug addiction education, you know, substance abuse programming versus, you know, more hardcore criminals that, you know, assaulted with firearms or violent robberies, you know, kidnappings, murderers, or things like that. We had proposed also a differentiation between contact sex offenders and non-contact sex offenders. We think we need to differentiate that in the classification system. Also, females, a little bit more flexibility and leniency as to the application of a lengthy sentence because majority of females that in my experience, and there's a lot of literature out there, and even the Office of Research and Evaluation, Bureau of Prisons, backs this, that most of the female inmates are victims of abuse and of their loved ones and fall into the criminal lifestyle because of mental health depressions, anxieties, and things like that. And sometimes there's a myth there that they're overclassified based on the Bureau's classification. But there's a lot more to come in, I think, in the future for male and female offenders. Also for the folks that are in the LGBTQ community that are in the prisons. There's a lot of changes coming down the pipe with that, Bruce.
Yes. There sure are. And some interesting housing options, you know, man, we got to wrap it up. We're inside 2 minutes, man. That was another good show there, Mr. Santana. Very informative, you know. All this stuff sounds very technical, but man, with the right people who are really having their eye on the ball with federal prison issues and their loved one is in a federal prison, this is very, very germane information. And it's really good to kind of hear it, right, nearly from the horse's mouth. You know what I mean? I mean, it's the next best thing to hearing it right from Washington, D.C. in many ways. So, looking forward to you and I doing some more training on this issue, going to more state associations. We've done some continuing legal education here for the state of Texas, and you can see us on the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers magazine, The Champion. We usually have something featured in there every month around page 21. So again, you know, this is our work is recognized by the highest authorities and state and national authorities and those things. And rightfully so, because we're getting some phone calls for clients from pretty, I would say, high powered and extremely competent federal attorneys, former federal judges, federal officials turned into legal private practitioners. And they are seeing our work and the level of what we can bring to them. So, all right, ma'am.
Absolutely. I appreciate you letting me share some of the things that we do, Bruce, with the audience. And if they do have any questions, they could always contact us at federalprisonauthority.com.
And our email. Look at information. Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming on the show today. Yeah, and the site is federalprisonauthority.com. The YouTube channel's First Step Act, and our email there at is federalprisonauthorityBOP@gmail.com. So, folks, there it is. Another great episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. And be with us next week. I know that Justin Nimmergood will be back next week, and possibly Ms. Bumgardner will be back next week as well to talk about some relationship coaching and things that are very different from federal prison issues. So until then, have a great week, everybody. Thanks for listening. See us on iTunes. We're under The Concierge Coaches Show on Instagram, LinkedIn, and also Facebook. So until then, have a blessed week. We'll see everybody here next week on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.